Welcome back to New World Next Week. I'm James Corbett of CorbettReport.com.
And I am James Evan Pilato from MediaMonarchy.com. With effect from today, banks shall convert the current dollar balances to the new currency. We have got that story, plus homeschool is in session, but first we're going to try and get out ahead of the next war before it starts in earnest. China trying to gain space through force, U.S. Admiral says. James, I will admit, I thought from that headline that this was about outer space. China trying to gain space through force. I saw space and force and just finished it, I guess. But we're back here on this planet. China's actions in the South China Sea were an example of it trying to gain territorial space through force and were destabilizing the region, a U.S. admiral said just this past Tuesday. The Philippines and China have had a series of maritime run-ins, including water cannon use and heated verbal exchanges that have triggered concern about an escalation at sea. Admiral John Aquilino, not Michael Aquino, commander of the U.S. Indo-Pacific Command, said in an address to the Lowy Institute think tank in Sydney that China's actions against the Philippines, particularly in the Second Thomas Shoal, were dangerous, illegal, and that they are destabilizing the region. Aquilino said he was very concerned about what's happening in the Second Thomas Shoal, where the physical action of the Chinese Coast Guard and a fishing vessel has resulted in sailors injured. So what's next and how far are they willing to go in that area, he asks. He said similar actions by China were also being seen elsewhere in the region, including in Japan and Malaysia. This is not isolated. This is about the PRC, People's Republic of China, trying to gain territorial space unilaterally through force, and that's our job, he said, under his breath, I think. China claims almost the entire South China Sea as its territory, policed by an armada of Coast Guard vessels some more than 1,000 kilometers, that's 620 American miles, from its mainland, and has maintained its responses have been appropriate in the face of Philippine encroachment. Aquilino said there was positive movement in the U.S.-China relationship since the leaders of the two countries had spoken, with no concerning maritime interactions between the U.S. and China since then. But I don't actually know how long that's been. Days? Weeks? Continuing to look, though, with an Asia-Pacific perspective, if you will. Biden to warn Beijing over aggressive South China Sea tactics as the rusting hulk of a Philippine vessel called the Sierra Madre, grounded on disputed reef, has become a potential U.S.-China flashpoint. So they're fighting over some treasure there. And rigging America's next top president, 2024. China using AI-powered social media accounts to influence U.S. election, Microsoft warns. An expert said Xi Jinping's government is doubling down on efforts to disrupt the U.S. election with a flurry of AI-generated memes, original footage, and infographics about divisive issues. Because if a meme of Jesus and Satan arm wrestling changes your mind, you probably wasn't your mind to begin with. James, I noticed that doesn't say the word deep fake specifically, though. And it isn't just China, though. Canada spies found China interfered in their last two elections. So says Reuters, Canada's domestic spy agency concluded that China interfered in the last two elections. An official probe heard on Monday the firmest evidence so far of suspected Chinese meddling in Canadian politics. And circle it on around to your home of Japan, James. Japan seeks to defend national interests in the South China Sea from VOA News. Japan set to improve its strategic partnership with the Philippines at an upcoming trilateral meeting with the U.S. amid rising tensions between Beijing and Manila. Leaders of the three countries met on April 11th in Washington. No, that's right now. James, I got my dates mixed up. So they're about to do this right now. And that's why we're called New World Next Week. We try and get ahead of the things actually happening. James, help me out because I apparently can't read headlines or check dates very well. So fill us in.
Yeah. Okay. So yes, they are going to meet on April 11th. As we are recording this right now, it is April 10th there in the U.S. So we don't know what they're going to say at that meeting yet, but we have an idea. And we can garner that idea from a press release, a joint statement that was released via the Pentagon last week on April 5th. Between Australia, Japan, Philippines, and the U.S., where those four nations proudly, bravely vowed to uphold the right to freedom of navigation and overflight and respect for maritime rights under international law, against those dastardly Chinese who are breaking it everywhere. And accordingly, 2 days later, on April 7th, U.S., Japan, and Australia warships joined Philippine forces in a South China Sea patrol, where they were showing off their forces and basically coordinating maritime activity and showing that they will stand up to those Chinese, specifically on the second Thomas Shoal in the Spratly Islands and the Sierra Madre that you mentioned there. For people who don't know about the Sierra Madre, it is a crazy story. So I'll throw in a link about this history. But this is a World War II vintage tank landing ship that was originally U.S. Navy. It was given to the Vietnamese Navy in the Vietnam War. After the Vietnam War, it was given to the Philippines. They rechristened it the Sierra Madre. And in 1997, they deliberately grounded it on Second Thomas Shoal as their way of planting their flag in the South China Sea and saying, this is ours. So now they do these resupply missions to their stranded vessel that they've been doing for, what, nearly 20 years now. And recently the Chinese were apparently using water cannons to deter one of these resupply ships. So now it's becoming a big thing. Anyway, it's a crazy story, but I think it is illustrative of the types of games that are being played in what I have called in the past, and I still continue to believe, is the next Cold War that they're setting up between the U.S. and China, which, in case I have to spell it out for the 8 millionth time, is every bit as engineered behind the scenes as the old Cold War was. But we're still at least in the cold section of it, but things are heating up, as evidenced by all of those stories that you covered there, and many more that I've seen coming through the news feeds in just the past week or so. The Daily Express, for example, secretive Chinese military advancements could pose threat to U.S. So says the experts, quote-unquote, that the Daily Express consulted, apparently as part of, I guess, they had to meet their quota for fear-mongering, clickbait-generating headlines, because they just completely invented this story by asking an expert about these secretive Chinese military advancements. Anyway, and then the headline goes out and people go, oh my god, those dastardly Chinese. The Times of India getting in on the act. New Cold War, the growing movement against Chinese land ownership in the U.S., because those Chinese are coming along and buying all the land up and driving prices up for Americans, which will be a familiar theme, for example, for Canadians and other people who have been dealing with this scourge of the Chinese real estate boom, as it were, and many, many similar stories besides along these lines. New Cold War, Chinese. We've seen, of course, the threat of the Chinese migrants that are inserting themselves into the migrant invasion that is invading the southern U.S. border there, etc. So there's a lot of that going on right now. But don't worry, guys, because former Jekyll Island swamp dweller and current roach infesting the U.S. Treasury Secretary, the Secretary of the Treasury, Janet Yellen, just returned from a Chinese trip in which she talked about unfair trade practices and TikTok and money laundering, and, oh, by the way, became some sort of Chinese social media star because she has adventurous eating habits and will eat some of the more exotic Chinese dishes. And on the exact same day that the Pentagon was issuing that joint statement with the Australian, Philippine, Japanese about defending the South China Sea, the U.S. was also holding military talks with China in Hawaii. So, trying to tamp down tensions. So don't worry, guys. I guess everything's all taken care of. No, clearly there is some sort of coordinated... I have definitely seen it coming through my news feeds, specifically in the past couple of weeks, obviously over the last several years, but really ramping up right now to get people invested, personally, emotionally invested in the Chinese threat. And this is exactly in line with what I was talking about at the Open Mind Conference in Copenhagen back in 2017, echoes of World War I, China, the U.S., and the next Great War. So I'm just putting it out all out on the table for you here today. Mark my words, this is going to be the next big military narrative for the coming decade. I cannot tell you if it's going to happen today, tomorrow, next month, next year. I can't tell you if it's going to kick off in the South China Sea or if it's going to be some sort of Taiwan incident or what it is, but China is the new boogeyman. You are being engineered to hate the new boogeyman, but you don't see the puppeteers who are puppeteering both sides of this phony conflict. And I think I would like to call that out before it happens so that people can be hopefully inoculated, to use that word, against this narrative.
James, couple questions for you. Is Rodrigo Duterte still the head of the Philippines, the tough guy, the sort of Trump-style, you know, tough-talking leader?
That's an excellent question. I want to say no, but I'm not sure who is the current president.
Because I feel like if he were still around, we'd hear about him. Because he was always in the news. He was, again, this sort of as above, so below parallel to Trump when the Trump days were first playing out. There was this story a couple of months ago, I forget where she was visiting, but that Janet Yellen ate magic mushrooms on some international trip as well. So, man, she is just coolly, coolly cool. Anything she says now, of course, would have to be more believed, right? Shall we move to our second story this week?
Let's do it.
We go to Zimbabwe. Zimbabwe introduces new gold-backed currency to tackle inflation. Taking this from AlJazeera.com, Zimbabwe's central bank has launched a new structured currency backed by gold as it seeks to tackle sky-high inflation and stabilize the country's long-floundering economy. The new currency, called Zim Gold, Z-I-G, will be backed by foreign currencies, gold, and precious minerals. So says the governor of Zimbabwe's Reserve Bank, talking to reporters in Harare last Friday. They said the ZIG would circulate alongside a basket of other currencies. He said the central bank would also introduce a market-determined exchange rate. With effect from today, banks shall convert the current Zimbabwe dollar balances into the new currency. The move is aimed at fostering simplicity, certainty, and predictability in Zimbabwe's financial affairs, presenting the new banknotes that come in 8 denominations, ranging from 1 up to 200 ZIG. The new notes feature a drawing of famous gold ingots being minted, as well as Zimbabwe's famous balancing rocks, which have been featured on previous currencies. Zimbabweans have 21 days to convert their old cash into new money, according to the central bank. 21 whole days, huh? I wish you'd stop being so good to me, Captain. So that, by my accounting, although you should double-check all my math on this episode, that's going to be April 26th. LouRockwell.com asks, will we see Zimbabwe regime change next? And that's exactly what my chat was saying when I went over this story a couple of mornings ago. A gold-backed currency? Sounds like someone needs a freedom invasion. So huge thanks to awesome Media Monarchy member Alan in Zimbabwe for not only alerting me to this story, but also for adding some context, because I also might have said, yeah, this is good news. But they already run those jewels. Al Jazeera's Gold Mafia documentary series. Undercover reporters pose as gangsters with up to $1 billion in black money that need to be cleaned. They gain remarkable access to members of Africa's Gold Mafia and film closed-door meetings with crime bosses. A senior African ambassador offers to launder $1.2 million using the cover of his diplomatic bag. Criminals offer lucrative deals to clean over $100 million through government gold export schemes. At the center of it, their operations, is Southern Africa's biggest laundromat, the Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe. The aforementioned central bank, the Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe. Gold Mafia, not an ad, four-part series by Algiers Investigative Unit, looks at how society's obsession with gold underwrites a global shadow economy. The undercover team infiltrates the rival gangs that turn dirty cash into gold, which is then sold around the world. Through thousands of confidential documents and exclusive interviews with whistleblowers from within the criminal organizations, investigators obtain the blueprints of billion-dollar money-laundering operations that service the political elite. And the investigation leads to the highest offices in Southern Africa. So, James, to me, now it kind of looks like they already have a central bank and they already rig the gold market. You may as well back your currency with NFTs from FTX. I did go into this story on my Tuesday Morning Monarchy and actually played a little clip from Gold Mafia. And I've got a lot more links on MediaMonarchy.com. Zimbabwe launches new gold-backed currency, the ZIG. So, James, had you heard about this one?
Not one peep crossed my news wires about this particular story. So thank you for bringing it to my attention. The only place I heard about it was on Morning Monarchy, so I'm glad I am a listener to Morning Monarchy. But yes, it's an important story. And on that note, just sidebar, if there are people out there who have a good website that they use to keep track of information coming out of Africa in particular, I would be interested to know about that, specifically the RSS feed, because that's the way I tend to keep track of the news. But anyway, yeah, good. Thank you for filling in this hole in my own understanding of international monetary structures. And it is an interesting story, but yes, I am not exactly holding my breath that this will be the savior of the Zimbabwean economy, let alone some sort of beacon for the world. And we can garner that from some further reporting and information that we can take from, for example, Bloomberg, Meet Zig, Zimbabwe's latest shot at a stable currency, where they note Zig is the country's sixth attempt at establishing its own currency since 2008, when inflation crossed 500 billion percent. 500 billion percent inflation sounds pretty dire, doesn't it? And they also note the Zimbabwean dollar had lost ground against the US dollar every single trading day this year before it was finally put out of its misery on April 5th. Reuters, Zimbabwe's new Zig currency starts trading, credibility doubts linger, does note that the question of whether this will even be generally accepted as a form of payment and a store of value is up in the air, as 80 to 85% of transactions in Zimbabwe right now are conducted in foreign currencies. And the experts consulted by Reuters say that Zimbabwe has an insufficient $285 million of hard currency and gold reserves. To fix the economy, Zimbabwe needs to address these root causes of its problems. But counter to that, the update from Bloomberg, Zimbabwe's Zig currency strengthens the day after debut, even as it roils commerce. So it actually went up in perceived exchange rate value the day after its launch, which, hey, that's the right direction, right? So let's all hold our breaths and wait for the Zimbabwean Central Bank to wisely steward over this new currency. I don't trust them as far as I can throw them. I don't trust any central bankers as far as I can throw them. And I tend to think, I don't even know if they really do have the gold reserves they say they have. Plus, their estimates also include, well, if we took all of our diamonds and other holdings and converted them into gold, that would be this amount equivalent of gold. So we have this much. It sounds like a bunch of parlor tricks being played by central bankers. So believe it as far as you can throw it. And I don't know if this speaks to just the types of people that I meet, but I have met multiple people now who have whipped out their Zimbabwe $100 trillion note. You know, haha, look at this toilet paper that was passing as currency, and largely from Bitcoiners or cryptocurrency enthusiasts. But decentralized, non-central bank, peer-to-peer currency, who needs that? Give me a central bank currency that will be backed by their promises, their usually paper promises of gold, and trust us, scout's honor. Would we ever lie to you? And then I want a government to come in and make legal tender laws to say what I must or must not accept under penalty of law as payment for debt. That's the way to run a system. Oh, wait, no, that's stupid. And it leads to things like, remember the Indian demonetization scheme of several years ago, where they went, hey, surprise, everybody, we're taking these banknotes out of circulation. You got to get the new ones. Ah, have fun. Remember that? The demonetization scheme? Well, if you don't, go back to episode 313 of the Corbett Report. I covered it at the time, Demonetization and You, where I talked about that scheme, why it happened, how it was part of the elaborate digital ID infrastructure rollout. And guess who makes an appearance in that episode? Oh, right, Mr. Bill Gates, of course. So anyway, there are many reasons to be skeptical of all of this and all of the other shenanigans that get played in the gold markets, etc. I'm not thinking this is quite the equivalent of the Gaddafi gold-backed dinar, the let's go start bombing Gaddafi type of thing. So, but we'll see. I mean, maybe I'll be proven wrong and the bombs will start flying on Zimbabwe. And if they do, then we'll know that it's for real, I guess. That's the twisted world we're living in right now.
Sorry, Alan. James, did you ever see Danny Boyle's film called Millions? It is about when countries within the European Union were going to switch over to all be forced onto the euro, and some kids find some bank robbery money that suddenly, like, how are we going to exchange all these millions of dollars? It's actually really good. It's nearly, if you can imagine, from the creator of Trainspotting and 28 Days Later, it's basically a kind of a kid's movie. Millions by Danny Boyle. I'll actually include a link. I did a Deep Focus segment on it a couple years ago. That's Media Monarchy's version of film literature and the New World Order. This is New World Next Week, episode 550, and Brock gets the wild card third story this week on 550. Gen Z, 74% more likely than other generations to want to homeschool their kids. Grabbing this from Upworthy.com, and again, everything we say is always down in the show notes. It used to be that if you said the word homeschooler, that's like chemtrails and Illuminati, people would conjure up images of a Bible-carrying homesteader whose parents kept him out of school so they wouldn't learn about dangerous ideas like carbon dating and evolution. And of course, James, as you and I have talked many times off mic these last several years, the prevailing political social dichotomy of the last 100 years has pretty much flipped, so somewhere around 8 years ago. While those kind of homeschoolers still exist, the homeschooling world's become much larger and much more diverse in the recent decades. In 1999, approximately 850,000 students homeschooled in the United States. Before COVID-19, that number had already tripled to 2.5 million, and in the past year, it's grown by over a million to now be 3.62 million and counting. These days, you'll meet homeschool parents from all walks of life who've chosen to educate their kids for all kinds of reasons, moving the typical homeschooler stereotype further and further from reality. Now we have a new generation of Americans thinking about how they want their kids to be educated. Gen Z, as I know we all kind of need the explanation of who says this is what year. I feel like, James, as the years have gone by, the levels have gotten more permissive, that even my wife is Generation X. What? That's 1980. Gen Z, they say, is now currently 12 to 26 years old, with 20-somethings at a prime age for starting or at least imagining their future family lives. Interestingly enough, they're even more keen on homeschooling their kids than their parents or grandparents were. Education technology company Age of Learning conducted an analysis of Google search trends and commissioned an online survey of 1,064 parents and aspiring parents to explore American interest in homeschooling. The results are telling and somewhat surprising in some ways. First, it's clear that Gen Z has pretty positive feelings about homeschooling since nearly half of them are considering homeschooling their own kids, 74% more than other generations of parents. Of course, it's always easier to imagine homeschooling kids you don't actually have yet, so their age and stage of life probably accounts for that sort of aspirational feeling, that portion of interest. But it says something that 59% of aspiring parents are more interested in homeschooling than public or private schools. You can find the research in the links we've provided, the homeschooling movement explained at homeschoolplus.com. Searches for homeschooling online went up 365% in the past year compared to the previous 12 months, and homeschooling interest is greatest in Portland, Atlanta, and Miami based on online search volume. And as we said those many years living in Portland, sometimes freedom is scary looking. You know, Ron Paul supporters, it's going to attract a wide array of people through the decades. From breadwinners to bookworms, the unexpected rise of homeschooling dads. How a global pandemic turned dads into educators. That is from Homeschool Hub Weekly. James, maybe we know this, maybe it's not a rhetorical question. The pandemic sort of acted like a 9/11 or like the internet. They knew that it was going to awaken and activate some people, but not enough to, I guess, help anybody that wasn't under your sort of direct parental control to say, no, you're not going to get that shot. Mm. James, am I too far afield there?
No, it's a valuable point, because what kind of revolution was 9/11 or the internet or these other awakening moments? Yes, there could be the positive side that comes out of these things where people start to learn more about what's going on in the world, but it's a question of what you make of it. Is the internet Gutenberg 2.0? Well, what was Gutenberg 1.0? I mean, yes, there was the Reformation and the toppling of kings and all of that, and the American Revolution, which led to the American Empire, or the French Revolution, which led to the Napoleon tyranny, etc., etc. So, you know, every awakening, every movement, every revolution is what we make of it and how we proceed from it. So it is a moment of potential, And it's a question of what we do with that potential. I am somewhat skeptical of the framing of this story and the way that it's... I guess I would need to delve further into the statistics and what they're looking at here, but it just strikes me that we can't really compare the aspirations of potential parents of previous generations by their online search activity. You can't go back to Gen X and see how many people were searching for homeschooling when they were 12 to 26, you know, 20 years ago. Like, it just, none of this math quite adds up, and so you can't really compare generations. So I don't know if this is really something, but... as you say, yes, it's easy to aspire to what you're going to imaginary do with your imaginary children in the imaginary future versus what you actually do in reality. But maybe are we moving towards a type of work environment where that might be more possible with more people working at home, etc.? I mean, again, there's a lot of variables at play. But as I say, I think it really comes down to what people do with this. Because even if you are homeschooling, if you are still a statist indoctrinated rube who swallows all sorts of stupid propaganda, etc., then you'll just have more direct access to pump that into your children's brain instead of the state doing it for you. You know, I mean, again, it's a question of what you're doing and how you're doing it and what your intention is, how you take the opportunities, etc. So it's a potential. It really is a potential inflection point. I don't want to tear down the story or poo-poo it, but as usual, it's what people do with it. And that's exactly precisely why I did start the open source education website, which, by the way, is still up there, opensourceeducation.online. That is hopefully a nice, easy way into the type of Corbett Report material that does correspond to certain types of subjects you might see in a homeschool curriculum. So if it is valuable as a resource out there, please spread the word, get it out there. That's what it's for. I hope it can have that effect, and that's why I'm doing what I'm doing. I'm assuming that's part of your mission statement there too, James.
Well, of course. I mean, so much of what we tried to do here is maybe take that potential and make it kinetic energy. And that is New World Next Week, episode 550. There it is, James. Your online education is available at newworldnextweek.com, the store between myself and James Corbett. It's got hoodies and hats, but it's also got the work, and that's really the most important thing. Yeah, I mean, the hoodies help spread the word about the shows, but it's the work, it's the stuff, I think, that's the more powerful things. Speaking of powerful things, your Media Monarchy radio broadcast, I do 40 hours a week of news and music broadcast at mediamonarchy.com/listen. Each day of the week has kind of a different theme. I jokingly say it's like sections of the newspaper. Newspaper? What's that? Mondays, I do world news and play rock and roll. Tuesdays, tech news and I play techno music. Wednesdays, food and country music. But your Thursday scary show. Thursday's got all the weird, gross murder and mayhem and pedogate stuff. But after all of that on your nasty Thursday morning monarchy, I always play the brand new exclusive audio of this very New World Next Week episode that you are listening to before it is published anywhere. Only me and Corbett and Brock have heard it. And I like to try and, again, you know, kind of put that out there, James, if folks come check out the broadcast. It is not FCC friendly, as we do keep it here on New World Next Week. So it is for adults only, the Media Monarchy broadcast. But I challenge folks to come check it out, James.
Excellent. I hope people will take you up on that challenge. And as part of our ongoing service to humanity to make New World Next Week listeners the best informed people on the planet, I took it upon myself to look up and confirm that yes, no, Duterte is no longer the president of the Philippines. He was succeeded in 2022 by, drumroll please, James, you're going to appreciate this, Bongbong Marcos. Yes, President Bongbong Marcos is now the president of the Philippines. So there you go. Learn something new every day, or learn a whole bunch of things on Thursdays if you tune into New World Next Week. Hope we can do it again next week. James, thanks for the stories.
Absolutely, my friend. Take care.